The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. All right, John.
Yes, I'm good, thank you.
I see that I'm just looking at, let me mute this, I'm just clicking on a Bloomberg link here, which is talking about JP Morgan says commodities may have just begun a new super cycle. What's a super cycle? I like that. When I was a kid, I used to think the bike I had for Christmas was a super cycle. But what is a super cycle? What's going on there, John? Explain that to us.
I did see the JP Morgan team justifying what they were doing and giving a bit of a definition for a super cycle, although I wasn't aware that there was any particular definition for a super cycle, but a super cycle in my mind is when the market really takes off from a commodity perspective or from an economic perspective, and so where you see extraordinary levels of growth usually lasting several years. We saw a super cycle in the early 2000s, or shall we say, really culminating in the peak of that super cycle in 2006, 2007, just before the world came crashing down with the subprime crisis. Thank you very much to the American banks for that. And of course, that was a debt crisis where the banks were refusing to lend to each other. Not that anyone needs reminding about it. And I think the stimulus programs that governments used created a second super cycle. So the first super cycle was the Chinese government creating huge growth through construction in China.
Yeah.
And all that culminated in peak prices in 2006, 2007. Then it came crashing down with the subprime crisis. Then we had another mini super cycle, I would call it, led by stimulus packages in China, in the US, because there was a lot of deleveraging of companies and debt availability. If you remember, companies like Glencore suddenly had problems with their revolving credit facilities and had to restructure their debt books. And that had the potential to become a bigger crisis. So what we saw was this stimulus and, new growth that drove commodities back up to high levels. Now what we're seeing is because of the COVID crisis, which is a much bigger threat to the global economy and to many, many sectors, we now see a lot of stimulus money being pledged, the U.S. pledging $1.9 trillion, and that's gone through the Senate, and that can almost certainly go through Congress as well. Plus, China has been pumping funds into new infrastructure. I mean, it was doing it anyway, but it just accelerated what it was doing, which is why China has been so quick at reviving economic growth and pushing ahead. And whilst China might touch the brakes from a debt perspective, it's definitely not going to slow down on developing its economy and developing the infrastructure. It recognizes it's in this sort of Goldilocks period where it's able to push through the development of road and rail and new suburban housing projects and all sorts of stuff like that without any real environmental opposition. I mean, you're in trouble if you oppose the Chinese government and you end up in a correctional facility really very quickly, I think. So they are pushing that at a pace, and they're determined to overtake the United States in terms of economic superiority and probably military superiority at some point. So if you've got the China growing, the US growing, and of course Europe catching up somewhat behind everybody else, as is normally the way, then you are going to get this super cycle from a metals perspective. And add into the mix the fact that everything is now being electrified, electric vehicles, renewable energy, offshore wind farms, all this sort of stuff is just a huge movement. Add it to the mix, and we can't see where the metals are going to come from.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm just looking at that chart there on that Bloomberg article. And it's, like I said, last time it happened, it went from almost 1970 and it peaked at sort of 1980-ish. And the trouble is, though, after the super cycle, we tend to have a collapse. And then the next one, literally, it collapsed in the 80s, was bad. The stock market didn't go anywhere for a while, up and down. And then it went up again, like you said, early 2000s, up to 2009. And that's where we had a big collapse again. So it lasts for a long time, it looks like. And they're saying that, you know, this thing, the vaccine stimulus around the world, optimism, and like you say, electrification. Do you know what I was thinking yesterday? And I don't know what this means for the economy, but if you look at all the people, and it's just, you know, I'm looking at it from an economic perspective, of course, there's real lives behind this. But if you look at the people, the majority of people who died via COVID-19, they are above the age of 80, you know, generally non-earning people who are, you know, taking pensions and all that stuff. So you've got that strata. So what I'm saying is, will this, I know it's a horrible thing to think, but if you wipe out that strata of people whose immune systems are weak and they're not working, they're not producing anything, then surely the population as a whole becomes more efficient productively, don't you think?
Well, you have a point, but we don't need to worry about that now because the vaccines, and thank God the government's getting the vaccine program out.
Yeah. I suppose there's not a lot of people, but I suppose there's millions of people have been killed though from that thing, you know. So I just think, you know what, sometimes like when you go through these periods of, the markets are rallying on this, of course, but we go through these periods, and generally the businesses that survive, and we can put this from a business perspective as well, the businesses that survive and thrive are the strong ones, and they get stronger, you know, they take more market share, and so they grow faster again. So you do have these cycles that happen, so I can very well see it happening for the next, you know, we need a big, so obviously it'll be a bit bumpy, and we'll have a couple of corrections maybe, because the economy has to catch up, but I do think we'll have a bullish next.
You hit on a very good point there. The companies that survive will be in a fantastic position to take advantage of the growth that we are about to see. And yes, it's absolutely worth supporting those businesses. And personally, I'm pumping every spare penny that I've got into the stock market because it's all happening. I was very concerned a few weeks ago when we heard reports of China locking down cities because they'd had renewed outbreaks of the coronavirus, but we've seen very few reports since then. So I think the risk is less. I think the great thing from the GameStop saga in the US is the hedge funds have had their wrists slapped and they're not shorting things in the way that they were before. So thank you, Mr. Musk, for doing that. And I think the markets are off to the races. So you don't want to be investing in bonds in a hurry because the interest rates are so low, and all the growth is going to come out of the equity market, which is the place to be.
Yeah. Absolutely cool. Okay. So what stocks have you been buying, John? Now you've really gone into it. What stocks are you going to look at?
I'm buying. I bought a couple of oil stocks.
Oil? That's a contrarian play, but that's going to expand, of course, you know. I mean, oil's going to come back, I think, isn't it? Definitely.
Yes. Yeah. Well, oil is already coming back. I mean, it bounced quite quickly last week and this week, so it's pretty busy there. I bought a pharmaceutical stock, but it's not my area, so we leave that to Vadim to talk about.
Which one? Tell me.
I bought Evgen Pharma. Okay. I thought that was quite interesting.
What do they do?
They just do something pharmaceutical. It was something
I love that.
Vadim was talking about a while ago.
Yeah, they do something pharmaceutical. That's what I need to know. Yeah, that's fine. Cool. Okay, cool. What else then? What else have you
bought? Ark Minerals. I bought some more of that because, they're likely to get an offer from Anglo American. We know Anglo American. When I say an offer, it'll be an offer for a joint venture or some form of participation in their underlying copper project in Zambia. We know that Anglo American have done their technical due diligence. We believe that passed from a technical perspective. And Anglo American are just looking at what sort of offer they're going to make and doing their corporate due diligence. So hopefully that that will all go through. It really now is up to, well, will that offer be good enough for the CEO of ARC Minerals to accept? Now, remember that Nick von Schoending, who's been in the mining industry for a long, long time, he used to work at Anglo American. He used to work very closely with the chief executive. And I think he understands what this sort of offer can be worth. Hopefully Anglo American will put some money into the company. And I'm sure that Anglo American will end up investing in the underlying assets. So I say I'm sure, it really depends on the quality of the offer they make. So for me, I think the risk is worth taking. I love the exploration portfolio that they have in Zambia. I think it's absolutely the place where you're going to find more copper. We know, in fact, the couple of the projects have got quite a lot of near surface copper of very good grade, and I think they're going to go into production in a small scale, probably about 10,000 tons a year, starting probably 18 months time. So they're working on a scoping study for that at the moment, and I say small scale, but 10,000 tons a year is over $80,000 of saleable copper. So they'll produce a concentrate of some sort. They won't get 80 million dollars a year, but they'll get something close to that. I think it'd be very worthwhile. It'd be funding that they can use to explore the rest of the portfolio and hopefully find something much bigger.
Cool. What else then? What else, John? Anything else?
We've been writing about Bushveld Minerals this week. They came out with a fourth quarter statement and full year production and sales numbers. They confused us all with these intercompany sales figures. So it took a little bit of working through. Yes, they're reporting a loss for 2020, but then who isn't? And I think Bushveld is a good example of a company that is a survivor. It is growing. It's got the funding to grow, which is great, not just at the Vametco Vanadium project, but also at the Vanchem Vanadium facilities as well. So they are a growing producer. And they also have this technology business where they're going to produce vanadium for these vanadium redox batteries. And the really clever thing is you're going to be able to lease the vanadium for the batteries. And these batteries are for utilities. They're large-scale, utility-scale batteries to support offshore wind farms and solar farms and stuff like that. And I really think this is going to be a driving force for Bushveld going forwards. And I'm a big fan of the company. I'm sorry to see that they've pulled back on their production estimates for next year. I wonder if they're just being a bit overcautious with that, which I think is a feature of trying to underpromise and overdeliver. They haven't been terribly good at that in the past, but I think they're going to get better at it. And I think they recognize that the COVID restrictions have the potential to slow everything down a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous. Any other news on anything else, Johnny?
Well, there was Altus Minerals, a new discovery up in Mali at their Diba project. So some pretty good grades coming out of this. The new discovery is just 1.5 kilometres away from the Diba discovery. So that's nice. I think that's adding value. And I think we're going to hear a lot more from Altus on what they're doing with this gold project. Grades of 8.5 grams a ton, 6.5 grams a ton, really quite nice. So I think what's going to happen is there'll be a central mine there and a number of satellite deposits, and hopefully they can process this through the process plant of one of the nearby gold mines, because they're in a good area for gold mining. Government's incredibly supportive, and I think Altus is going to do well off the back of this.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. All right, and any other news at all, Johnny?
Well, SolGold, bit of a reality check for those guys. They've delayed the pre-feasibility study that they've been working on. Looking to develop a huge copper mine in Ecuador. And, when you're planning something of that scale, and it's a block caving operation, which is technically very complicated and difficult, and, the CEO moved aside in order to allow, shall we say, more expert people to take over and run this. And so they're looking at all sorts of different ways of optimizing the mining process, maybe not doing the 6 kilometer declines that they were proposing, perhaps to put in shafts, that sort of thing. There's a lot of work that, you know, in the planning stage that needs to be done, and it's worth taking the time because this is going to be a $3-5 billion project one of these days. And you know, it needs a lot of thought. So these things always take longer than anyone expects, and they rushing through the feasibility study on a project of that scale is a very false economy.
Yeah, cool. Marvellous stuff, Johnny. Anything else worth talking about?
I think that's probably it for the week. The mining sector is, you know, the boys are busy trying to get things done. Oh, there's a little bit of news out of Kodal Minerals of some geochemical sampling on their gold projects. So you've got the Chinese in there looking to develop the lithium project at Bougouni. So we don't know whether they'll say yes or no to that. We know that that the Sui Chin investors or shareholders in Kodal are very keen for that project to work. They invited Power China in, or one of their subsidiaries, to look at developing the project. So hopefully they'll say yay to that. But in the meantime, Bernard at Kodal is getting on with developing the gold portfolio. And why not? Mali is a brilliant place for finding and developing gold mines.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. John, I'm just looking at the Solgold share price. Yeah, it's not, it was like 340 pence, wasn't it, a few months back? And now it's 20, it's halved. So, yeah, it's a tricky, sticky time for them, but there we are.
The thing I really like about Solgold is the other exploration in Ecuador. They were very quick to go and grab a lot of the better-looking exploration territory. What Solgold are really good at is finding things. I think eventually they'll find something better than the Alpala project in another part of Ecuador, something that's closer to surface and which will have bigger and better value and probably a lot easier to develop.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Cool. John, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak to you next week.
Look forward. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.